morning and welcome to Public Eye Radio on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. Broadcasting from British Columbia's capital city and rebroadcasting on community and co-op radio stations in the Kootenays and Prince George. My name is Bob Russell. I'll be your host today. I'm joined in the studio by my co-host, John Jurisic, owner of Harbor Digital Media, past president of the Greater Victoria Chamber of Commerce and current director of the BC Chamber of Commerce. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Bob. And who introduces you?
I did.
Well, listen, let me do that for us.
Okay, fine.
Bob Russell to my left, owner of Loyalty Tel, a small telco in town. Also, past chief of staff with the Alberta government. And I must say, you look marvelous this morning.
Okay, carrying on. It's that time of year, folks, when in communities throughout BC, we notice there are some strangers in town. Easy to identify because many of them are wearing loud shorts and T-shirts with jokes on them. Yep, it's the height of the tourist season in many BC communities, and how lucky we are to live in a place that people will travel to visit on their vacations. Something I try to remember whenever I get stuck behind a calèche or a pack of mopeders who have left their responsibility to pick a lane at home. Tourism, myth or reality, that's our topic today. Supernatural BC, beautiful BC, the best place on earth. We're all familiar with the slogans that have been used to brand this province as a destination for everyone, including the people who are already living here. Too often we only hear the hype, but how important is it to our economy? How is it doing? We'll be talking to industry leaders and government representatives today about just that. In our second hour, the Honorable Ida Chong will be joining us to talk about BC-wide issues in tourism, as well as matters closer to her home here in Victoria. Later this hour, we'll speak with Curtis Grad, CEO of the Greater Victoria Harbour Authority, but joining us right now in the studio is Rob Giarletto, CEO of Tourism Victoria. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Welcome to you, and thanks for having me. And, you both look pretty marvelous this morning.
Excellent.
So well done. Congratulations.
Did John pay you for that?
We're still negotiating.
Okay. Yeah, well, you just lost some negotiating power. Tell us a little bit about Tourism Victoria, Rob. I mean, just some basics to begin with. I mean, what is it that you do, what the organization does, how it's funded, that sort of thing?
You know, we're a pretty dynamic and ever-changing organization because we're membership-based and our members change and our consumers change, and so we change with them. People know us mostly for being an advertising and promotion entity, so we do advertising campaigns in nearby markets like in Seattle, Vancouver, and Alberta, but really there's much more to us than that, although that's very, very important. We also work with a number of different sectors that are important for Victoria and for our visitor economy. We work with travel agents and tour operators throughout the world, specifically in Europe and Asia Pacific. We work with journalists across the world as well to help develop travel stories that appear in your newspapers and bloggers and electronic media. We work with meeting planners and other people who decide that their conference or their group would be good to have here. And we also work with local festival organizers to make sure that we are growing our festival business, our sport event business. We bid for events. There's lots of things that we do that maybe people don't see because a lot of it's outside of Victoria. But it's a dynamic organization funded mostly by a 2% hotel tax, which is a provincial legislated tax, which is enacted through municipal government in Victoria and Saanich specifically. And recently a 1% destination marketing fee, which is a voluntary fee that about 20 or so of our downtown hotels also charge. And we also have membership revenue, but those are the largest resources for us to go forward.
Is this organizationally, is this unique to Victoria, or is this sort of a template that's used in other communities as well throughout the province?
There's different variations of this template. From a provincial perspective, there are a number of destination marketing organizations like us. Mm-hmm. Most are funded through the 2% hotel tax. Mm-hmm. But each DMO, if you will, is sculpted to represent and fit its destination to the best that it can be. So ones that are as engaged in so many areas as Victoria's are rather few. Vancouver would be one. Whistler would be another. Richmond, Kelowna, and Kamloops. Those six really are engaged that way. And others are just very more specific to their smaller communities and what works for them.
Mm-hmm. Last week, we had a show talking about sport tourism. It was post-Olympics. It does appear that there are other elements to tourism and to tourism-related activity that that just aren't what's happening downtown. Mm-hmm. You mentioned festivals.
Yeah.
There's significant sporting events that bring a lot of folks. Talk about the different dynamics of what tourism is in our city that most might associate with downtown and a lot of people. There are probably many different elements to that that some of us might not be aware of.
It's a great point, and it's one of those things where you wake up and you see people, and you've got to know that there's a reason why those people are there. And so from a festival's perspective, you know, we've got community leaders like John Vickers and Kathy Kay and Daryl Marr and all these people who are bringing in festivals and events that really, really matter for Victoria. And we, along with the Hotel Association of Greater Victoria, invest dollars and resources to either, A, make sure those festivals start. So Buskers Festival, for instance, just finished its second year, quite successful. And also to make sure that people know about our events. So we'll work even with the marathon to make sure that that they're at their athletic shows or trade shows in Seattle. We want to make sure that they have some funding from us to help promote, you know, participation. So those are very important. Sport Host with Hugh McDonald is another very important piece for Victoria because that's the entity that helps bring events here. So right now, this weekend, we have the Canadian Ultimate Frisbee Championships taking place. I think today are the finals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, those are events that are joint efforts between Sport Host and Tourism Victoria, as was the National Figure Skating Championships we had last year. And then we have some great community leaders like Keith Dagg, who will go out kind of on his own with some other friends and bring the World Curling Championships here. Then Tourism Victoria will step in with some dollars to help fund that as well and help promote it. And so those are very, very vital for us. And we want to make sure that we have a healthy, growing festival and arts culture in this city because, boy, we're just such a den for it.
Okay, so let's start perhaps getting into some of the meat and potatoes of why some of this stuff doesn't happen.
It's only breakfast.
Yeah, but John's hungry.
So there's sometimes folks have indicated, for example, in Vancouver that now it's because of some of the problems with or in fact having some festivals and some arts and culture events not happening there. It's not a tourism-friendly city. There's some monikers around that I think are all false. But nonetheless, what are some of the impediments to having these events come? What are some of the challenges that you folks face at a municipal, provincial level in having more of a free flow for these activities to happen in Victoria?
Well, I mean, it sounds a little tired, but still very, very true. I mean, the number one impediment is quite frankly money. So, I mean, there are some people with tremendous spirit and tremendous capability and desire to get these things done. But at the end of the day, it takes money to get these things done. And so... You know, we're one entity, and the Hotel Association is another, but, you know, governments have stepped in where they could. The whole arts and culture sort of sector for BC has been sometimes looked upon as you know, the gym class of high school. You know, if you have to cut somewhere, that's one of the first places you're going to go. But really, I'm one of those believers, without getting too deep, you know, but holistically speaking, that arts and culture really... you know, necessary to the human soul and part of the reason why we travel in the first place. I mean, you want to experience those destinations and you want to live those destinations. So that's one of the big things.
Yeah. We're just going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll be continuing to talk with Rob about tourism in BC and Victoria.
From the CFAX 1070 Community Cruiser, here's what's happening.
Greek Fest runs Tuesday, August 28th through to Monday, September 3rd at the Greek Orthodox Church and Community Center on Elk Lake Drive. Greek Fest is a time for food, fun, and community. It's a free family event with partial proceeds supporting Tour de Rock. Scotiabank and BCSPCA Pause for a Cause is Sunday, September 9th at Clover Point. Critters gather at 9 a.m. for registration and the walk begins at 10:30. Register now and start collecting pledges. Bring along your pooch for a day of family fun. Once there, you'll enjoy fantastic entertainment and activities, all in support of our favorite furry friends. Help speak for those who can't speak for themselves. Every dollar raised helps the BCSPCA save the lives of abandoned, abused, and neglected animals. Find out more. CFAX1070.com.
Watch for our Mini Cooper Clubman at local events. Sponsored by Mini Victoria and Windsor Plywood. From Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Hi, it's Wendy from All Victoria Vacuums. Have you ever bought an appliance only to get it home and spend the next 3 hours putting it together? At All Victoria Vacuums, we take your vacuum out of the box, assemble it for you, and even offer to help you to your car. We carry the best brands like Dyson, Sebo, and Ricard. Does your vacuum need a fix? Our repair estimates are always free and our technicians rock. All Victoria Vacuums, the little guys on the corner of Hillside and Cedar Hill for 34 years.
Let the sun shine in with Excalibur Glass. Get more out of your outdoor or indoor deck with a custom all-glass railing. Constructed with aluminum post supports, these railings are durable and attractive with no top or bottom rail to obscure your view. And of course, it'll add value to your home. Get the most out of your scenery with a custom all-glass railing from Excalibur Glass. You'll clearly see the difference. Excalibur Glass and Aluminum, the homeowner's store. 2189 Keating Cross Road.
Sleep Country Canada. Sleep Country's Mix and Match sale is on now. Plus, we're introducing a new pillow. Perfect for summer, right, Christine?
Absolutely. Our new luxurious silk pillow. Silk has natural temperature regulating properties. Cool when it's hot and warm when it's cold. The introductory price is only $38.88 for the queen size.
Sleep Country's Mix and Match savings and the introductory silk pillow offer end soon.
CFAX 1070 is where Victoria turns first for local news, weather, and traffic with more news than ever before. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to Public Eye Radio on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. We're talking with Rob Giroletto about tourism in general and tourism in Victoria. Rob, how is tourism actually doing? If we go back over, say, a certain period of time, is it up, down in terms of what it's doing in the economy? I mean, people talk about visitorship or heads on beds or whatever like that. I know the industry's had some challenges over as a result of factors they've had no control over. Obviously, 9/11 was a huge, huge hit. Just where are we at?
It's a difficult, more difficult question to answer than you might imagine, because tourism is really made up of so many other sectors. And we always start with the hotel sector and the accommodation sector because they're the ones that have the largest percentage of actual people who are visitors, whereas restaurants, attractions, not attractions as much, but restaurants and retail are a combination of residents and travelers. How we're doing is we're very much on the same cycle as the rest of the province, with the exception perhaps of 2010, which was an Olympic year. But we got hurt pretty badly with the global, shifting of the economy to where it is, and I believe will stay for quite some time. Our mission then was to just hold on. Let's just hold hands, hold on, and get through this. And I think for all intents and purposes as an industry, we did just that. And now we're starting to see glimpses of growth here and there. So in 2011, we saw our first uptick in growth. In 2012, this year, after a relatively weak first quarter, we've started to see some good power coming back from our hotel stats specifically, but from other stats. And in August, this current month is very strong in Victoria. It's one of the strongest months we've seen in a while. And September should be okay as well. So it's coming back, but it's a very, very slow, very shallowish type of a growth. And it just really reflects the economy that we're in and, like I said, that we're going to be in for a while.
Rob, I'm a tech guy. You know that.
I do.
I've owned and operated tech companies since the mid-90s, been heavily involved with ViTech. And as we're all aware, the industry has grown and now call themselves the number one industry in the city. I've always been curious about that. I walk around Victoria. I see lots of tourists. I think part of those tourists go to restaurants, they go to hotels, they go to the conference center, they go to a lot of places. Talk to me about that. Is tech really the number one industry? I wonder. I happen to think tourism impacts the city in more ways than we think.
Well, I think there's different ways to measure impact, and certainly we should all be thankful that we have a pretty healthy, vibrant tech sector in Victoria, and it's vital for us. Tourism does permeate in a different way. So if I told you, for example, that we could have an industry that employs over 22,000 people, and that doesn't include people that are suppliers. So for every for every hotel uniform, every restaurant uniform, there's people making those uniforms, and not including those types of numbers. It has about a $1.89 billion impact. That's direct, indirect, and induced. And I also told you that there's hardly any tax dollars from your pockets going to sustain that industry. You'd probably say, sign me up. And that's what tourism is. And you know, when we talk about tourism, it's not about, you know, palm trees and sunshine and that stuff. It's a business, you know. And as a business, people need to understand just how relevant we are and how far we permeate. So who's number one to me is not as important as the fact that people understand that it's a vital piece of our economy that needs to be nurtured and supported in order to go forward and get better.
Okay, well, on the nurturing and supporting thing,
yes.
You know, one of my concerns, or one of the things I've always noticed about tourism is that the degree to which, you know, and I don't want to, you know, blanket the industry with this, but far too often, you know, industry spokespeople and maybe the operators who aren't doing all that well, you know, start looking to other people for solutions. You know, I'm sensitive to that, having been in government, that, you know, it's always everyone turns to government and says, fix it. Well, you know, there's not a lot you can do about, you know, exchange rates. There's not a lot you can do about, you know, entry back into the United States. There's not a lot you can do about a lot of things that affect tourism. What you're really left with more than anything else is what everyone always says they don't want government to do, but in the end they do want government to do, and that's to write a big check.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what could the industry be doing to adjust to what you, you know, said is the new reality? You know, there is a new reality. I mean, what could the industry be doing on its own? Are there cases of operators who have adjusted and moved on, or, you know, and others who are just sort of waiting for the good old days to come back?
Well, there's the answer is yes to all the above. You know, there are part of our industry that really understands it. They know that, you know, we talk about the weather a lot in Victoria, for example, something that we just can't control. You know, if it's really, really sunny one day or if it's very wet the next day, people say, well, that's impacting my business. Well, perhaps it may impact your business for, you know, short-term bookings very, very close to home. But really what industry has done in some cases and can do is focus ultimately on themselves. What does my business look like in 2000 and 2005 and 2010? And what have I done to make sure that my business is responding to the changing consumer? And that consumer is changing rapidly. We have five different generations right now in the marketplace. First time we've ever seen that. They all spend and react and invest in very, very different ways using different means. If we don't understand that as an industry and as individual operators, your business is going to suffer. The other thing that business and industry can do is instead of asking for government things, we can present government with opportunities to invest wisely with the limited resources that government has. So when we talk about infrastructure projects or we talk about how to leverage industry dollars with government, those messages usually resonate well, understanding the intricacies how government goes. So I think there's responsibilities on both sides of the ledger, but we need to work on things that we can control rather than things we can't, and we need to be prepared for things and be strategic around things that we can't control.
I'm going to put my small business hat on and maybe go from an industry level down to the folks that are trying to make a living out there.
Mm-hmm.
I started a new tech company in January of 2010, right on the heels of what was arguably the worst recession we've had in our generation. And folks continue to say, wow, when is it going to get back to pre-08? Well, it's not. Okay, we have a new reality. And that reality revolves a lot around very refined value proposition and defining our return on investment. And if you don't do those sorts of things, you're not going to survive. If you do it well, people are going to come and buy stuff from you. Is our tourism industry and our small business operators involved with tourism in Victoria adapting to that kind of new reality? How is your experience? Are folks out there doing that? Are restaurants trying to adapt to this new way of doing business?
Well, you can see now why you're such a successful business person, by the way. So,
God.
Yeah, you caught me. He's totally paying me.
There's got to be free food in there somewhere.
but to your question, some very much are. I mean, you know, if you think about it, there are still well over 3 million people coming to Victoria every year to visit. And there's X amount of businesses in this town that they're going to interact with, restaurants, attractions, hotels, transportation companies. And we know from a data perspective, the large percentage of the economic investment comes from our accommodations partners, our food partners, and our transportation partners. And so there are some that are really capturing that. I mean, you know, we were talking about, you know, if you look at Redfish, Bluefish, and there's a lineup.
All the time. Yeah.
If that was your one gauge for the global recession, it probably wouldn't be very accurate.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it shows you that there's an audience there to capture, whether they be residents or visitors. And I've always been on the record to say whatever Victoria does well for its residents will also resonate well for visitors. So
yeah,
you always build it for your home folks first.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some that just haven't. And, Tourism Victoria, we're in a really good, unique place because we have these 700 or so members. And what we can do is we can help and talk to them. Here are the trends that we're seeing. Here's how things are changing. And do you want to talk a little bit about your business and how things are changing? We have a system, for instance, for accommodations where we know how many people are going through our website to their hotel property. And I've got some hotels go, wow, we're not getting any bookings. And said, we put 300 people through to your website over the last 3 weeks, and you converted zero. So let's talk about that. That's a problem, but let's talk about the fact that is there a value proposition that you're missing out on? Is your website not navigable? And we have hopefully constructive conversations about how to make their business better. So, these are things that Tourism Victoria tries to do that you don't read about in the newspapers.
Absolutely.
But we want all businesses to be better, whether it's through us or through their own means. If everyone's full and busy and happy and the economy is driving and thriving, then Tourism Victoria is a happy place.
I want to pick up on something you said there about, what you build for your local people will work for tourism, and that's the starting point. I know you used to work for Travel Alberta. I used to work in the Alberta government as well, and I remember a study they did back in a long time ago. But they did a headcount at the Banff Gate on the Calgary side, and they did it over a year. And, anyone who's familiar with that park knows that anybody who goes to Banff or Lake Louise has to go through that one gate, because they come from Calgary. And they wanted to find out where people who were going to the parks were from. Now, we're talking about Banff, Lake Louise. We're talking about internationally probably the most recognized destinations in the country. And at the end of the year, when they added it up, 92% of the people who were visiting Banff, Lake Louise, or any of the four mountain parks were from Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
And, in the whole issue of myth and reality and what tourism is really about, I mean, I just would like to get you to comment a little bit more on just how important local residents are.
Local residents are vital, important, and our stats bear the same sort of thing you're talking about. I mean, people within BC travel within BC. I mean, why wouldn't you? I mean, what an amazing province.
Yeah.
People ask me sometimes, are you going away for the summer? I'm like, where would I go? May I go up island and explore a little bit, or maybe to the mainland? But we like to explore our own province. And I'll give you a real good one of our favorite topics is BC Ferries, and I'll give you a good example from BC Ferries, which obviously in the news a lot about their numbers, their ridership. But when you look from a travel and tourism perspective at BC Ferries, it's a very different slice than it is for residents who want to go back and forth and who view that ship as a means to get from point A to point B rather than actually an experience that's pretty unique to this world. Mm-hmm. In the stats are very, very clear that even though the ridership numbers have been going down, the tour bus traffic from last April to June versus this April to June, we're up plus 5% in tour bus traffic. So that there's people from across the world who don't view the same issues that we do on BC Ferries, are happy to take that, are happy to pay for it. And some operators may tell you a little bit differently from a margins perspective, but really from a consumer perspective, they're pretty happy with that experience.
Yeah. We have to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Curtis Grad from the Victoria Harbour Authority. Rob will be staying with us in the studio.
You know where Hool Electric is, and you know where their trucks are. And now you can have Hool right in your home with Hool at Home, a new online service that lets you order all your in-home electrical needs through the convenience of the internet. Both product and service, all at a great price. So log in, look around, and discover something totally new. HoolAtHome.ca, a new online shopping service from Hool Electric. Still the industry leader through customer choice since 1944.
Bolin Books Hillside Center is Victoria's community bookstore, bringing you the best books from around the world for more than 35 years. This week at Bolin Books,
Shadow of Night by Deborah Harkness. In a world of spies, Deborah Harkness has crafted a journey through a world of alchemy, time travel, and magical discoveries, delivering one of the most hotly anticipated novels of the season.
Bolin Books, Victoria's community bookstore in Hillside Center. Call the Bolin Book Line at 595-READ.
Need cash today? Got some old jewelry lying around? Bring it to Old and Gold and exchange it for cash. For your old gold and silver, they'll beat any price in town. Old and Gold at Ford and Douglas. Online at goldvictoria.com.
Need cash today? Got some gold, DVDs, bikes, cameras, video games, and tools? You know, stuff lying around? Bring it into Barclays and exchange it for money. You'll see why they're the Pawn Stars of Victoria. Barclays Exchange in Chinatown, 516 Fisgard.
Have you been living with a water entry problem in your basement or crawl space? Have you been reluctant to deal with it because you saw the mess and heard the cost next door at your neighbor's? Well, Earth Service Drain Master has been solving water entry and drainage problems economically for 32 years. Trust our drainage team to restore, repair, or renew your existing system back into working condition. Call Earth Service Drain Master at 250-479-0195. We will be glad to arrange a visit and assess your problem.
The word home means a relaxed, comfortable setting. I'm Linda Bishop of Highgate Lodge, where home is waiting for you, where you'll feel the warmth the moment you arrive. You'll be invited to join in, but the choice is always yours. You can go on weekly shopping trips with friends. You start the day with a good breakfast and enjoyable company. You finish the day with sharing a meal with friends. You can be assured of a helping hand if you need it, because you're home. Call 250-472-0077 for a tour. Come home to Highgate.
Your fair weather and not so fair weather friends. With a forecast you can count on. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to Public Eye Radio on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. We're talking about tourism this morning, and now we're joined in the studio by Curtis Grad, President, CEO of the Greater Victoria Harbour Authority. Thank you for coming in, Curtis.
Good morning, and thank you, gentlemen.
Rob Giraletto, from CEO of Tourism Victoria, is staying with us. And let me start off, Curtis, by, again, just, you know, as we like to do with everyone, first off, just tell us a little bit about what the Harbour Authority is, what it does, how it's funded, how it's structured, just what its responsibilities are.
Maybe what I'll start is by what it's not.
Okay.
It's not a federal harbour port authority like you would see in Vancouver or even in Nanaimo. It was actually transferred in a different way. It's a not-for-profit, and it's an economic development not-for-profit for developing this local harbour. But it was done in a different way, and I might explain that a little bit later. The important thing is that it allows us to be able to reinvest and improve in that infrastructure. And the real work of the Harbour Authority over the last 10 years since it was established was to take those federal assets that were handed over, Ogden Point, Fisherman's Wharf, and a lot of the Causeway properties in and front of the Empress and down towards the Blue Bridge, and reinvest and operate and develop them for the benefit of the industry and the public. So that's both the marine industry and the tourism industry. So we're in the infrastructure development business, and we're in the economic development business, which obviously helps tourism as well.
Mm-hmm. John?
I've maintained that I think our harbor is one of the most beautiful on the planet. And I think that it's I think we can do a lot better. I think we can take advantage of those assets. And I think with you at the helm of the GVHA, that's going to happen. So let's talk about some of the various different things that might be able to happen in that harbor to make it an even better harbor and attract more tourists. Talk to me about the cruise ships. I mean, I don't think folks actually entirely know that you folks manage that. You folks try to make that as pleasant an experience as possible. And you folks try to get those people into and out of downtown Victoria. And without those cruise ships and without that traffic, that would not be good.
Well, and I guess where I'd like to start is the actual quantity of or the quantum of what we see happening at Ogden Point. This summer, we'll have in the order of 230 cruise ships visiting, which when you actually count the number of visits in Vancouver, because they're a home port, they count them twice in terms of passengers. We're actually at 500,000 passengers, which is a larger number of individuals visiting than Vancouver. They're not staying as long because it's not a home port. But getting that visitation right, where you get the balance between a really great experience for the passenger or the visitor coming in, but also making sure that you balance the impact on the community, because you've got at one time three cruise ships at a time coming in on a Thursday night with roughly 10 to 12,000 people arriving. So it really is a logistical feat to be able to get people efficiently downtown, efficiently out to Butchart and to other locations, and getting that balance right and not having that a constraint to your future growth, but also making sure that it works with the other base of tourism in the community as well.
Are you finding that, generally speaking, everyone's helping you trying to solve those problems, or are there folks out there that try to not help?
I would say today I find the environment much more cooperative. I think that what I've tried to bring to the table is open dialogue and discussion. We're not always going to be 100% in agreement to how things should be done, but we all agree on one thing. This is a fantastic place. We want to share it, but we want to share it with the idea that the visitors are here to enjoy themselves, but the residents also live here and want to be able to enjoy their neighborhoods.
Yeah. Rob, you had a question?
Yeah, and the Harbor Authority has taken a lead role now, Curtis, in the CPR steamship building, and certainly had an announcement around Robert Bateman, and I know there's some of the other announcements coming. Perhaps today would be a good time to unleash some of those. I think that would be good. But I do
yeah, you're not allowed out until you announce something. Yeah.
By the way, you look marvelous as well. I remember my first week when I started Tourism Victoria, well into my fifth year now. One of the first questions I got right here in this studio was, "What's going on with Belleville Terminal?" So I'm linking those two questions together because I think they're easily linkable. How did you want to comment on some of that?
Well, let's start with the CPR terminal. When we decided to put a proposal in for the CPR terminal, we saw other proposals come forward, which in their own right had their own merits. But we felt that the CPR terminal was part of a bigger puzzle. And that bigger puzzle was the puzzle of the Belleville terminal and ultimately that combined ferry terminal that people have been talking about and trying to solve for decades. So the goal was to get CPR terminal to be able to succeed on its own, but be part of the next phase of approaching government and approaching others to make that combined ferry terminal happen. So we're really just focused right now on getting the right tenants in the building. Bateman is a big part of that. I know that months ago you and I talked about what would be ideal in that building is a really iconic attraction. We were really pleased to be able to secure Bateman for the third and fourth level. We're now right focusing on negotiating to get the right mix of tenants in levels 1 and 2 so you get that synergy, but really setting it up to be able to approach government and have a plan for the next phase, which is the combined ferry terminal.
And those tenants would be?
Would be announced in due course.
That's my second shot at that, John. I don't know if you want
to. I know. I won't let him out.
for the folks that have been following the terminal story for quite some time, something you and I both live on a regular basis, and it's been so challenging because of all the different players that are involved. What do you think, if you could isolate one or two sort of key things that have to change in order for a shovel to get in the ground to get this done, what would you say?
I would say it's coming at it from 180 degrees from where it has in the past. I think that classic line of form follows function. A lot of very well-intended work in the past was focusing on the grand vision, which is important, but was focusing a lot on architecture and what it was going to look like from the outside. We've started by talking to the ferry operators about how does it function? What are the critical elements of a combined ferry terminal look like? How many passengers does it need to handle at one time? What's the laydown area for all the vehicles? What's the circulation area? What should this thing look like? Once you quantify that and you know what the relative price tag is, then you can start to have a conversation. We're not quite there yet, but we're having those initial discussions at an operator level, operator-driven solutions that then get built up into an actual implementation plan, not the other way around.
There's this thing hanging out there called environmental tourism.
Yes.
I'm not entirely sure what that means, but I know that it's good. And I know that the city and certain folks involved in tourism are certainly trying to promote environmental tourism. Tell me a little bit whether GVHA is involved with that, what that might mean, what some of the criteria, how do we define it? How can we help that industry in our city?
Well, I think anytime you're looking at building infrastructure or implementing something new to improve your business, if the environmental initiatives and goals can line up with your business goals, it's a win-win. And if you look at, as an example, we're trying to find better ways of getting people to and from downtown. One of the really obvious things that came to light was we've got whale watchers in the tens of thousands being bused from the Ogden Point to downtown on an ecotourism type of product, only to hop on a boat to go back up the inner harbor.
Past the cruise ships.
Past the cruise ships an hour later out to their destination. Well, for the community, those extra buses going through town don't make any sense.
Exactly.
For the companies.
If you live in James Bay, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Absolutely. It doesn't make a lot of sense for the people that are operating those businesses as well. So the win-win is we want to be able to find a way of putting a multi-purpose float out in Ogden Point that the passengers go straight from the cruise ship to the whale watching boats. And that's just the first step. But here's that win-win. It doesn't have to be a win-lose for it to be the right environmental initiative. When you find those win-wins, it's the way things can happen.
Curtis, I was just wondering, I wanted to ask you, you're one of the few people that's newer than I am to Victoria, so I thought I'd take this opportunity.
Is this some sort of hazing ritual?
No,
that happens later.
That happens much later.
I keep telling you, you're not allowed out of here until some announcement is made.
But I'm curious overall from a business perspective and a government perspective, what stark differences and uniquenesses do you see in Greater Victoria that perhaps you haven't seen in some of the other places that you've lived in?
Thanks, Rob.
Anytime. Welcome to Sunday morning.
I don't think I'm telling any secrets. The multi-jurisdictional nature of the harbor is a reflection of the multi-jurisdictional environment within the region. And I'm not here to solve or even suggest the solution to the 13 municipality question, but it really comes down to working together. If we talk and work on a united plan, whether it's a harbor plan or a regional transportation strategy, whatever it is, it has to be coordinated. And I only look north to Nanaimo. They were very successful in getting the airport and the harbor developed because they spoke with a single voice and they came to government with a single plan. That's what we need to do better.
Mm-hmm. And just when we talked about the terminal, for instance, there's a lot of players there, right? I mean, there's yourselves, there's the city, there's a Provincial Capital Commission. Is it just a normal part of business for you to try to unite everybody around that common vision or around a common project? Or what challenges do you see?
Well, this is, in this particular environment, the only way we're going to be able to progress going forward is to get a broad spectrum of people around the table. And yes, it may be multi-jurisdictional and it may sometimes be looking like a historical impossibility to get people to work together, but it can be done. It just takes time, energy, and a little bit of patience.
We're just going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll continue talking to Curtis Grad. This is a subject I'd like to come back to after the break because I find this fascinating and probably the single biggest impediment to anything getting accomplished.
Okay, Victoria, I've seen you line up for blocks to save 10 cents a liter on gas. I know you like a deal, so when it's time to sell your real estate, let's discuss how you can save thousands in realty fees. This is Kevin Ramsey, realtor with Fair Realty and SweetHomeVictoria.com. I will get top dollar for your property, I won't cut the buyer's agent's commission, and I won't sacrifice any marketing. And my rates reduce further when you sell quickly or when I find the buyer. In short, my commissions make sense. Visit my office at 1564 Fort Street or contact me through SweetHomeVictoria.com.
Hi, I'm Robin Muir from Hatch & Muir. In today's workplace, voluntary early retirement and severance packages are becoming commonplace. If this affects you, you need advice on the fairness of the package offered, income tax consequences, replacing your benefits, and the impact on your pension and your RRSPs.
Hatch and Muir, certified financial planners, serving Victoria with investments, insurance, and advice. Online at hatchmuir.com.
Hatch and Muir, we can help you.
End of the Rolls Big Anniversary Sale is finally here, where you can get exclusive introductory pricing on luxurious soft carpet. And that's just the beginning. For a limited time only, pay only $189 per square foot on premium laminate flooring. Get your entire home covered for less. It's all happening right now, so hurry in during the Big Anniversary Sale at our 53 locations nationwide.
Come see our new location on 601 Boleskine Road and on Millstream Road in Langford.
Hi, this is Barry Bowman for Ross Place Retirement Residence. As you may know, Ross Place has completed a major renovation. They currently have suites starting at only $1,950 a month, including all meals. So if you or a member of your family are considering moving to a retirement residence, take a tour of Ross Place, and you'll be very surprised by the great room, movie theater, billiards room, and more. Respite suites are also available for $75 a day, including all meals. Call now to arrange a personal tour.
Vera's Burgers BC Lions Football.
Brought to you by Dumont Tire Craft and Irwin Industries.
Today, the BC Lions are back for their bye week as Green Nation comes to town. Lions, Riders at BC Place, kickoff at 4.
Right here on CFAX 1070.
Join Rick Ball and Julio Garavetta for Vera's Burgers BC Lions Football on the Lions Radio Network all season long.
Local news on your smartphone. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Go to CFAX1070.com. CFAX1070.com. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to Public Eye Radio on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. We're talking about tourism, and right now we're focusing on Victoria's Harbor, which anyone familiar with the city knows is a focal point and what people come here to see and people who live here enjoy. It is sort of a dog's breakfast when you walk around the Inner Harbor in terms of, you know, you got vacant lots, you've got, you got a heliport, you've got docks, that look like they don't get used, you've got, you know, a walkway that goes for part of it, then suddenly ends. As someone, you know, from a government background, I look at it and I get, you know, having a grasp of the jurisdictional issues, I sort of go, well, good luck. I mean, how could you possibly come up with a comprehensive plan when you've got not just one but several municipalities? You've got the provincial government. You've got the federal government. Within the federal government, you've got different departments within the federal government. And then you've got First Nations issues. And they've all got a stake. And you know, could you talk to that a little bit? I mean, I think, first of all, our listeners could, would appreciate knowing just how diverse the jurisdictions are and what you have to deal with.
I think the strongest example of that multi-jurisdictional issue is in and around the Inner Harbor. If you start from the CPR terminal and work your way around all the way over to the Blue Bridge, when you start at the CPR terminal, you're on PCC property. Then by the time you get towards the Welcome to Victoria sign, you're on to GBHA property. Then you get closer to Milestones and you're stepping on PCC. Then you walk through and you walk over a magic...
And just to clarify, PCC is Provincial Capital Commission.
Provincial Capital Commission.
Right.
Then you step on to Ship's Point, and depending on what point of Ship's Point you're on, you're either on GVHA property or PCC. Then you step into that big parking lot with Harbor Air. You're on the city's property. Then you step down to Redfish, Bluefish. You're back to our property again. You step across the Magic Line, and you're onto a parking lot owned by the PCC. Then you step onto private property, which is next to our water lot. It's very complicated. Now, the ownership issue is not so much important as the absence of a plan. Mm-hmm. If all of those four or those three key players plus the federal government could get together with the private sector, we're only talking about a half a dozen different entities.
Well, if I could just interject for a second, let's explain the federal component as I understand it, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong. You also have throughout that entire line of property owners you talked about. You have this issue of, I think it's the high tide line or whatever, from that out, that's federal government property.
Yeah, the navigable portion of that is still controlled and operated and operated by the regulator, which is Transport Canada.
Right, exactly. So.
Yeah. So for me, it's not so much about the ownership. It's about the lack of a plan and sometimes working at cross purposes to each other. If we don't have that plan, we can't develop the vision for that inner harbor with all the players. And we're trying to do our own part with our own properties. So at Ogden Point and Fisherman's Wharf, we're going to long-term planning and rezoning. But it allows us to say, look, we need to plan our pieces, but we need to work with everybody else, especially in that inner bowl of the inner harbor, to really work on what the vision is for the community for the long term. And it can't just be driven by one or two parties. It's got to be a broader interest.
So, Curtis, I think some people that are listening might say, wow, they're all in your office. We've had tons of plans. The most recent being the Blue Ribbon Panel plan that, if you look historically, probably one of the better plans. So what would be different with a new plan? And maybe you can explain the word plan a little bit, because I know you've got boxes of them in your office.
Well, I'm sure
you've cleaned them up by now. But
let's use the word vision. You know, the vision for what this harbor is going to develop like, and making sure that you've got the essential parts of that vision. The transportation parts are key. Because they take up the biggest amount of space and they're the most critical operationally. So ferry terminal, cruise terminal, and float plane terminal are the three biggest things that are sort of fixed constraints. But those boxes of plans, if I could just buy the stucco and use them for the foundations of the building, we'd have the Belleville terminal built by now. So the problem was that a lot of those just focused on the bits and pieces, but not the comprehensive view. And if you look at the places, I think you talked about Baltimore earlier when we were talking offline, but also, you know, in South Africa, there was a distressed harbor port that needed to be redeveloped. The community came together and they looked at a comprehensive plan and then they transformed. Plans that sit on a desk or sit on a shelf and do nothing are worthless. Those that actually drive action are the ones we need. And it means setting the framework to actually go and implement the plan.
As you folks are familiar, been involved with the chamber movement now for some time, every year a board of directors sit around and try to identify the three key issues that they're going to work on in any given year. Almost invariably, every year, it's a talk about amalgamation, that should such a thing happen with the municipalities, that would be a good thing for business. Incidentally, we took a look at some of the chamber priorities in the 1800s, and it was amalgamation. And thankfully, you folks are from out of town, or at least came from there to dive into the challenges we have trying to get people together. So, what's going to break the logjam? Could it be some group of business people that start to help define that vision? If we leave it at the municipal, at the organizational governance level, perhaps someone 100 years from now might be looking back going, wow, look at the same priorities.
You know, if I could just sort of jump in there, and Curtis, you know, I think interested in your answer to John's question about the business side, there is another way that this gets done that has, you know, it has gotten done. I think of Halifax as being a very good example. I'm old enough to remember being in Halifax, and if you went anywhere near their waterfront, you just didn't feel safe. It was that bad. And then very quickly, it was developed into one of the, you know, more pleasant and nicest places you'd want to go to, and certainly, you know, for residents and for visitors. And my understanding of how that happened was that the federal government showed up and wrote a really big check. And and no one has any trouble getting together when someone else is footing the bill. So that's one way it can happen. And we'll hear, you know, often people just say, well, why don't you just do that? Well, you know, we don't have the money we used to have. And so this gets to what, you know, your question, you know, what other alternatives are there? To what degree could the business community get together and make something like this happen?
In your earlier segment, you mentioned this phenomenon of people just go to the government and say, fix it, and write a big check. those days are over, but they also fix it and write a big check would also come with have a plan and know how you're going to spend the money. Some of these big initiatives, and I'll think about some of the runway extensions in BC over the last 10 years have been write a big check and the airplanes will come. Well, we know that some of that didn't happen. And now that's to the detriment of some very strong arguments for runway extension like out on the peninsula. So we need to be able to come with a strong business case, just like the airport's going to be coming with a strong business case for their initiative. And it's not just government fix it. It's government, here we have a plan. Here's what the plan's going to cost to happen. We need your share of it, and here's how the balance of it's going to be made up. Not to just say, give us 100% of all the funding and we'll make it work. It's come with a strong business case and a strong plan, and don't just ask them to fix it.
I've worked with numerous different municipalities with economic development out in the West Shore, with the City of Victoria, etc. I maintain that the harbor is unique to the city, and that with a proper vision, with cooperation, with momentum, this is the economic engine for the city. I think that we need to do whatever we can to encourage and help you folks at the GVHA. And if you feel that there's some way forward here that we can galvanize some business interests, we have Ida Chong for the next half an hour. Let's do it. And let's make this happen, because we are sitting on the most beautiful piece of property, as I maintained earlier, on the planet. Let's make it happen. And I do not want to sit here and see my kids say, wow, if you only got together, this would have happened.
Well, and, you know, the harbor is the first and last impression people get. And it's this really unique multimodal experience. You can come in and out of Victoria half a dozen different ways. If you don't get it right, you're not going to get those return visitors. And if it's a bad experience, they will tell others. So for us on the infrastructure side, it's making sure we get that right, that those first and last experiences into Victoria are positive.
John, very quickly, or Rob, very quickly.
Well, I just, you know, from a business perspective, if I park tourism for a second, I mean, we see what's going on with, you know, places like Uptown. And you know, when you're living in a non-Victoria proper and you say, why should I go downtown? You know, those are the conversations. We look to businesses, but we look to the harbor. And Curtis and I have had conversations around really snippets about the vision for that harbor. Very simple things. People hear vision sometimes. They think we're building, you know, an amusement park down at the Inner Harbor. It's about look at all the open concrete space that we have there, and should it be there? It's about those types of things, and those are healthy conversations. But I agree with you, John. We need to. I talk about putting a shovel in the ground and getting this done.
Well, thank you, and we have to break for the news. But Curtis, thank you very much for coming in. When we come back, we'll be speaking with the Honorable Ida Chong.